This week on the Edible Valley Podcast, we welcome Dr. Thierry Vrain of Innisfree Farm. We're going to talk about genetically modified food.
Welcome to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Blaine Prost.
And we would like you to join with us on our ongoing adventure exploring our Edible Valley. I am Jonathan Fraser.
Hi, Terry. Welcome to the studio. It's great to have you. It's an honor. Pleasure.
Thank you.
John and I were both at the TEDx talk you did at North Island College about a month ago. It was a fascinating topic, something that's dear to my heart. Could you tell us a little bit about your background?
My background, I was a research scientist for the federal government for 30 years, Agriculture Canada. I did my research in three institutes, one near Montreal, one at UBC, and I finished the last 8 years in Summerland in the Okanagan Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you get involved in that?
Well, I was a soil biologist when I started. When I did my degree in North Carolina, I was a soil biologist, and that's what I did. And basically, we're talking industrial agriculture here, so that's like chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I was specialized studying a particular kind of microscopic pest worms in the ground that are damaging agriculture. You can have an epidemic of it, an infestation, just like you have insects in trees or something, and they will eat the roots of your crop and kill your plants.
Right.
So looking at chemicals to kill them. That's how I started. That's what I did for 10 years. But I was studying them and doing also some taxonomy work. You know, they're microscopic and you need to know which species you have, etc. So they're so tiny, it's very difficult. And somebody gave me the idea, that was in 1987, somebody gave me the idea to use molecular biology to look at the DNA to be able to identify them.
Mm.
So that's how I started, and I learned my skills, and I learned DNA, and I did that. And then once I knew that, since my responsibility was to get rid of those pests, how about genetic engineering? I could possibly engineer resistance into the crops. And so, you know, started playing with genes and introducing gene into a crop to make the plants resistant to the pests. Very much like a BT crop where you have a BT gene expressing a protein and now the crop is resistant to the insects,
right,
to the caterpillars. Same thing.
So you were able to do that?
I was doing that, but I didn't finish the project, etc. My funding dried up. I was getting older. I wasn't having fun. I was a manager. I was manager of a big research group, and I wasn't playing in the lab as often as I wanted to. And the culture had changed, the funding culture had changed. When I was hired, the government, you know, my research director would give me a budget. Say, this is your budget, you go and play in your lab and publish a lot, etc. And then 10, 15 years later, it became acceptable to get funding from industry, from corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few years later, it was not just acceptable, and I was highly recommended that you get funding from industry. Because if you had funding from industry, that meant your project was good, it was useful, it was going to go for hand. Plus, of course, it was like free money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so more and more academics did that. And I was uncomfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of the reason why I retired 10 years ago. A little earlier than I should have.
Right. So is now most of the funding for research is through corporations, or does Agriculture Canada still do research?
Yeah. Government labs do that, but that's government lab. Universities do that way more.
Right.
I mean, it's perfectly normal in, you know, in university, in academia, to get your funding from industry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's called academic capitalism.
Mm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about genetically engineered foods today. So for the people that may not be quite familiar with that, could you give us a quick explanation of what a genetically engineered food is?
Genetically engineered food, when you use those words, you mean that it's food made from genetically engineered crops, genetically engineered plants. a plant is genetically engineered when you actually introduce, insert a gene from another species. Mm-hmm. In nature, species mix. You can't mix species, sorry. Plants reproduce only from the same species.
Right.
Okay. Like humans, mm-hmm. you know, mama, papa, you get your genes, you give your genes to your kids.
Right.
If you want to bring a gene from a bacteria or a fish into a plant, you need to use a technology which is genetic engineering technology.
Right.
It's not going to happen naturally, obviously. And so we discovered, scientists discovered about 30, 40 years ago, how to do that, how to take a gene from a fish or a bacteria or a tomato or a human and put it in another plant. It's not that complicated. It's not that difficult. You know, as a scientist, I mean, you obviously have to learn the skills,
mm-hmm.
but it's relatively pretty simple. And 40 years ago when we started, it was believed that it was a very simple and very clean technology that you just put your gene and the genes code for a protein. The gene will make the protein that you want because the protein will do the work that you want. That's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it could be a protein that would be toxic to the caterpillars that I just mentioned, or a protein that makes a plant resistant to some other pest, or a protein that makes the plant resistant to a herbicide, or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So you put in a gene and you expect the protein that comes from the gene. Clean.
Mm-hmm.
Except now in the last 10 to 15 years, we've discovered that when you insert a gene, it goes anywhere. You have no control. It goes anywhere in the genome, in the chromosome of the plant,
mm-hmm.
or whatever you're engineering. You could be engineering a bacterial cell or anything else. But you have no control of where it goes. It just goes somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And really what's happening is that now we are discovering that the transgene, the gene that you're introducing is called a transgene, is unstable, basically. And the transgene will, being unstable, will make the protein that you expect and proteins that you don't expect.
Mm.
And that's actually a very important matter.
Right. So it's the unknown gene, or the unknown protein?
The unknown protein.
Yeah. Is the issue.
The I call them rogue proteins. The rogue proteins are the issue, and the rogue proteins have been very ignored. I mean, everybody knows it. Every scientist knows about that. But the rogue proteins are completely ignored by industry and the federal agencies that are there to make sure that the, you know, the food supply is very secure,
right,
and very safe.
Turning a blind eye to it.
Totally.
Yeah. And so, what is this in the terms of human health and consuming these products? What are the health effects of that?
Well, we have absolutely no data on human health because obviously for ethical reasons, you couldn't test, you know, toxic proteins on humans.
Right, sure.
Unless they were volunteers, etc. But really, in essence, once you know there are rogue proteins made, there's potential for those proteins to be dangerous or toxic. And we now have a good number of experiments. We're talking like dozens and dozens of experiments, of studies done mostly abroad in Europe,
mm-hmm.
That show that mice and rats fed engineered crops, engineered food, engineered soy, engineered corn. Those mice and rats, after a few weeks, a few months of feeding, develop organ damage. And I often say that those mice and rats are the canary in the mine. You know, the miners 100 years ago would go down the shaft with a cage, with a canary in the cage, and the canary would be singing in the dark,
mm-hmm.
because that's what they do, the male canaries, not the female. And And when the canary stopped singing, that's because there was too much methane and the canary died, and it was time to get out before the mine exploded.
Right.
Those mice and rats are having organ damage. And it's like there's numerous studies showing that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So the health problems affecting us today with increases in so many things, I mean...
There are also studies done on human cells, you know. And the same thing happened. You can test the BT protein, you can test the proteins on human cells, or you can test pesticides on human cells, and you can see the results. It's pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. There are toxicity studies done. And we have, because the engineered crops, the engineered foods are not labeled in the store, there's no way of knowing what's engineered and what's not.
Right.
That's a decision from the government, from the government agencies. And because of that, we don't know if there are symptoms in humans. And a great deal of people are concerned that, we observe symptoms. It seems that the allergies have gone up tremendously in the last 20 years in the population, in children, mm-hmm. or autism, or, you know, a whole number of symptoms like that. Well, it's modern life, you know, it's stress, it's plastics, or I don't know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know. And that's why I speak up. I think those foods should be labeled.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Right. I actually found that today. I was going to the grocery store with my daughter, and it kind of occurred to me that I kind of like to know what she's eating and what she's having. And when you're looking at things, I don't know, you can't really tell the difference between something that's been modified and that's something that's not. So
of course not.
No.
You can't. Absolutely not. And that the expression for it is called substantial equivalence. When the biotech companies came up with the engineered crops, the government in the U.S., the government in the U.S. and the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, all agreed that those crops were equivalent to the non-engineered crops, you know. Yes, it is engineered corn. It expresses a gene from a bacteria, and there is a protein from a bacteria that is toxic to caterpillars, but you wouldn't know looking at it, or you wouldn't know tasting it, or you wouldn't know any other way. So it is equivalent. Mm-hmm. There is no need to test it.
Right.
And that's what it's been for the last 20 years.
So yourself now as a farmer, how have these foods affected farmers? Like, I'm guessing in the beginning this is a positive thing, that it's easy to farm now.
It's really not that complicated. There's basically two technologies engineered crops. There is the herbicide resistance, and that is an amazing technology for the farmers. It allows them to spray their crops with a herbicide, and normally the crops would die because it's a herbicide. It's designed to kill plants. But the plants have been engineered to resist the herbicide. And so that's why I call it the magic herbicide, because now you can spray the stuff and the plants are not affected. They are perfectly resistant. It's great for the farmers. It's absolutely wonderful. Or same thing with the insecticide, you know, the BT crops. It's insecticide, it's built in the crop. It's wonderful. It's great for the farmers. Now, how is it for the consumers? Well, there's a big lag there. That's why it should be labeled, that's why it should be tested and reviewed and investigated.
And where does the residue herbicides end up after they've been sprayed?
The residues of herbicide, the residues of any pesticide really end up in the food. Mm-hmm. We've known that since, 1962, the Silent Spring.
Right.
That was a bit of a wake-up call, DDT, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
The herbicide that is used with that technology basically is Roundup.
Right.
It's a product from Monsanto. they were going to lose their patent because it had been on the market for almost 20 years, and that's the time of but you can have a patent.
Right.
And they invented this technology. So now you buy the seeds of the plant, the engineered seeds, you grow your corn, and you must use Roundup for the technology to work.
No, you cannot
use anything else.
Right.
So it doesn't matter. Roundup doesn't have to be, you know, you can't use anything else.
Right.
So it's pretty elegant for smart.
Mm.
Yeah, as far as the biotech companies are concerned.
So
this technology has been so successful. Basically, 90% of soybean in North America are engineered. Over 80% of corn, canola, etc. So all those crops use Roundup. So Roundup is now like an incredible success story as far as the biotech companies are concerned.
Disaster for the environment, though?
It has increased the volume. The volume of sale has increased so much in the last 15 to 20 years that Roundup is now everywhere in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I just read a few days ago a study done in, I think it was in Germany, where people in cities not exposed to Roundup in any way.
Mm-hmm.
The only exposure is food. Had Roundup in their urine.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the rain. It's in the water. It's in your food. Yeah. Now, Roundup, when I was in high school, not in high school, in graduate school, Roundup was not a new product. Roundup was basically said, it was defined as a very, very innocuous herbicide. First of all, it's a herbicide. It doesn't affect animals.
Right.
It only affects plants. And it disappears in the soil. It's very degradable. It's biodegradable. It disappears in a few days, in a few weeks.
Right, I've heard that before.
But, you know, 10, 15, 20 years later, now it appears that, no, it's not biodegradable after all. It stays.
Mm-hmm.
It remains in the soil. And we've known for quite a number of years now, but it actually affects humans and animals in a major way. And now, in the last few years, there's a whole series of studies done on human cells that shows that it's a chelator. Roundup is a chelator. It holds metals.
Mm.
Now, your proteins, many of your proteins, need a metal atom to function, like hemoglobin.
Right.
Or, you know, of chlorophyll, there's a magnesium atom in the center, et cetera, et cetera. Well, if chemically speaking you hold that atom away, well, the chlorophyll doesn't work, or your hemoglobin doesn't work, et cetera. So a lot of your proteins need metals to function.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you are contaminated with a chelating agent that holding that. Well, what do you think happens in your cell? They don't function very well.
Right.
Hence, you get symptoms at the organ level or the organism level, the human person or your heart or your kidneys or mice and rats,
mm-hmm.
and you get symptoms. The residues are not high, you know, it's in parts per billion, in parts per million, so it's not like you're being poisoned instantly and you're going to die the next day. But it's enough that it's a very chronic exposure. Basically, it's like cancer. It takes 20 years to happen.
Mm.
And you do get organ damage in mice and rats, in the equivalent of the 20 years that it would take a human to get the symptoms.
Sure.
There was a study done in France, and the biotech industry has just gone nuts when they saw the results. They went crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And that study showed that the mice fed, I think it was soy, GM, genetically engineered soy, or corn, perhaps, corn, I think it was corn, laced with Roundup, list with or without Roundup, with or without corn, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Okay, all the treatments were there. And fed for the whole duration of their life, 2 years, 2 full years. Mm-hmm. That's the duration of their life for normal mice. And about halfway through, they developed breast cancer, kidney damage, liver damage. And it's very real.
Yeah.
And like I said, the biotech industry was just did what they often do. They just went down like a big sledgehammer onto this study and say it's not valid because of this, because of that, etc. It is being repeated in Europe. Mm-hmm. So we will know in a year or so, we will know the results. But yeah, this is the status of, and it's not the only study. There's many, many studies showing organ damage. So yeah, it should affect the human population.
Mm-hmm. So this is probably something that we're not going to notice in the human population for a few years?
No, because it does take 40 years.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we have an 80-year lifespan.
Right.
So, like a summary of that study in France said, well, you know, it would take 40 years if you started very young. Right. And eating engineered food every day, very young. And today, the average North American is eating about 200 pounds a year of engineered food. Wow. On average.
Well, I mean, corn is such a huge part of our diet, as well as soya.
And soy. Anything you buy in the store,
right,
that's processed or prepared. Soups, baking, anything.
Anything in a bowl.
Has soy and corn, of course. Yeah.
That's why it's important to get out there and cook your own food, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And so, if you buy organic, does that guarantee you're not getting genetically modified product?
Yes. Yes, organic and engineered food are not compatible.
Right.
Yeah, the organic movement has been very clear right from the start.
Right.
And the biotech industry is, you know, constantly saying, well, why don't we coexist? You know, we could, you know. It's not possible.
No. Yeah, no. I guess not, because those genetically engineered crops need the herbicides and the pesticides
mm-hmm.
to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, they can't compete with the mm-hmm. tree, like they can't compete with the weeds and stuff.
And it's not the only problem. Obviously, if you are an organic farmer and you have a field of organic corn, you cannot have a field of engineered corn next to you because you're going to get contaminated.
Right, yeah.
It's very clear.
Yeah.
Or canola or whatever. Yeah.
And so, are these crops able to thrive in the wild? Like, can they just, I know they found some wheat in Oregon that was, they found to be genetically modified, and nobody's quite sure how it got there or what the story is with it. But
well, it's, yeah, I haven't read that, but it's pretty obvious. I mean, I have read in other places previous to this find that, you know, Monsanto would like nothing better than having contamination everywhere, because then, you know, what's the big deal? Resistance is futile, you know.
Right.
It's like, oh, we're all happy now. It's all over. It's everywhere.
Right.
So the incident in Oregon with the wheat is major contamination, if you want to call it that way. Nobody knows where it came from.
Right.
It's so big. And the reaction all over the world is so big that
mm-hmm.
you know, Monsanto is getting a little uncomfortable, because wheat was not accepted, was not engineered in the U.S. because they export half of their wheat
right.
all over the place, all over the globe. And nobody wants engineered wheat.
Right.
Japan, Korea, Europe, etc. Nobody wants engineered wheat. If there is a possibility that it is contaminated, they're going to lose a lot of their market.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody is going to point the finger.
Yeah.
So is there a lot of countries who aren't interested in genetically modified vegetables or foods?
90%. There's hardly any vegetable engineered.
Okay.
Yet. Except for sweet corn.
Sweet corn.
Yeah. 90% of all the engineered crops are grown in 5 countries in the world. USA, Argentina, Brazil, Canada, and India. I think Canada is last, actually. So, U.S., of course, 40% of all the engineered crops are grown in the U.S. And only five, it's a handful of countries growing those crops. And there's probably another 20 or 30 countries that, you know, accept those crops. Everywhere else, they want labeling or there's a ban. All of Europe doesn't want it. There's a, called a precautionary principle, you know. Why should we accept something that has not been tested? Particularly when study after study after study show that there may be a serious problem. You have to be out of your mind. So the governments in Europe and many other places are well aware that their population is not about to accept it. In France, they mow the stuff. They burn it. In Hungary, they burn it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't want it at all.
No.
Now I wonder why we accept it.
Well, it's very obvious that, you know, we live right next to the USA, and the US government, federal agencies decided, it's a political reason, it's a political thing, decided right from the start that there's money to be made and let's grow it and sell it. In Canada, we're next to the US. We're not exactly a banana republic, but we are basically very small and we do no different from Mexico or many other small countries. We're a very small country, right. 30 million people. And we basically do what we're told. And so, yes, of course, the agencies in Ottawa, the CFIA, which is in charge of testing the crops, has adopted exactly the same protocol of reviewing the engineered crops that is done in the USA. There's absolutely no testing.
But we can't drink raw milk because that'll kill us. But we can eat all the GM corn we want.
Don't change the topic.
Sorry.
Yeah, the if you want to one comment on that topic, it's like it's in Canada, in the U.S., and probably many other countries, the major preoccupation of the safety agencies, mm-hmm. the agencies that look for safety for the food, is microbiology, mm. okay? Bacteria mm-hmm. and fungi, yeah. toxin. Yeah. Fungal and microbial toxins in the food. That's their major preoccupation, with some good reason. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you see what's happening with the CAFOs, with the concentrated animal farming operations, etc.,
yeah.
the beef, the chickens, and others, that's where the E. coli come from. That's where a lot of the infestation come from. How on earth does it come onto the organic food and organic producers is a mystery to me.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they use contaminated manure.
Well, I think that's what it is, yeah. Not properly composted.
No, the E. coli 157, that, you know, deadly mm-hmm. Bug that has been around for years now, originated in a CAFO
mm-hmm.
because, and it's really easy to understand, the cows are designed to eat grass.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you put them in a barn and there's no grass, you give them corn.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's engineered or not is a separate issue.
Yeah.
And that's not what they're designed to eat. So they get sick. Well, if they get sick, you give them antibiotics. So that's another topic, scary topic, actually. And they get sick, and their stomach becomes a completely different environment where it should be, and that's where the bacteria breeds. And that's how we get E. coli 157.
Right.
But anyway, that's not the topic of the day.
Not the topic we're on today. So.
Yeah.
For sure.
So how do we, as consumers, how do we fight this whole situation? What do we do?
I'm not really a activist or a scientist. I'm a scientist.
Yeah.
Not an activist. But if I was to say something about, to answer your question, I would say the first thing is to make your voice heard. Talk to your MLA, talk to your government, talk to your leaders, talk to your municipal council, talk to your grocery store manager, talk to your family, talk to your neighbors. Make your concern heard. Mm-hmm. The next thing is protect yourself, just like you said, Jonathan, cook. You know, don't buy prepared food. Don't buy processed food in the store. Mm-hmm. There's two sides to that statement. You stop buying prepared food and processed food, that means that you're going to starve the beast.
Mm-hmm.
As well as protect your health. Mm-hmm. Go organic. Not everybody can afford organic food. Mm-hmm. You got a backyard? Grow some food.
Yep, you betcha. Yeah. No, that's good advice. That's what I've been telling people too.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to make that life decision to cook and to be in charge of your...
Make your voice heard.
Yeah.
That's number one. You know?
Well, we live in a consumer-driven world.
We are, and we're still in the democracy, and you know, that's democracy. If people really believe very strongly, more and more people really believe very strongly that there's enough of this,
mm-hmm.
yeah, obviously something will happen.
That's right, yeah.
It's amazing when people start asking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just mm-hmm. that, what's in my food?
Mm-hmm.
Where's it from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those small questions, they start building, right? And then you learn more and you get more.
The wheat... In North America, the wheat, the technology to engineer wheat was designed like 15 years ago. It was done in Winnipeg, in Canada, et cetera, et cetera. So we could have it. We don't have it because half of the crop is exported and other countries don't want it. It's economics.
Right.
Sure. We don't have engineered potatoes because McCain, the biggest producer,
mm-hmm.
and McDonald, the biggest consumer, in their wisdom, decided that they didn't want engineered potatoes 10 or 15 years ago because they were really concerned of a backlash from their customers.
Sure. Yeah.
It's that simple.
So it does work.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really concerned about the food my food's eating because I eat protein. And so that's something I'm really concerned with is
mm-hmm.
making sure that I ask questions every time I shop for all my meat locally, and I ask the question, and I've sourced out places that I'm pretty confident, you know,
mm-hmm.
telling me the truth, and I'm buying stuff that's eating what they're supposed to eat.
Just even just the act of asking,
mm-hmm.
of mentioning that you're concerned. Imagine if half of the customers going to the grocery store, you know, ask mm-hmm. to talk to the manager and say, what about this? What about that? You know, it's like,
mm-hmm.
They start thinking about it. I just read today or yesterday that Target, however you pronounce it, is not going to stock engineered salmon.
Oh, good.
Because they've heard enough that people are concerned.
Right.
Did hear another one. I'm sort of paraphrasing. I can't remember. I won't say which. One of the major supermarkets has actually said they won't accept any packages that have non-genetically modified foods in it in their stores. And I thought that's a bit bizarre to be forced into telling producers that are using non-genetically modified ingredients in their food are not allowed to package and say it on their packaging.
Ah, you can't have it on the package.
You can't say it on the package.
No, you cannot have it on the package. That's labeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No labeling.
Which is crazy to me. I mean, it makes no sense at all that if you say, hey, I have, these are all fresh ingredients and good foods in there, but yet I can't say that there isn't.
No, no. It's been the same in the States with the recombinant bovine growth hormone, RBGH.
Mm, right.
Yeah.
Many producers, many stores wanted to label it, you know, no growth hormone in our milk. And Monsanto sued them successfully.
it seems ridiculous. To...
Competition rules.
It's economics.
Yeah.
It's, you know, whatever you can get away with. It's...
It all comes down to the almighty dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Not so almighty dollar.
It's yeah, it's the bottom line.
Yeah. Well, so is there any hope for the future, or are we just a bleak circumstance here? I guess it depends on what the consumer wants, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I tell people all the time, the government's not going to change anything. If you wait around for them to do anything, you're banging your head against the wall. The only way to change is to change yourself and mm-hmm. to change your neighbors and to help encourage people to do it for themselves.
You know, is we just said it. It's the bottom line.
Yeah.
We live in a consumer capitalist system. That's it. It's that's what we have decided to have. If we're not happy with it, we can change that. But in the meantime, this is what we have. You go to the store, you buy the product you want, and not the others. That's all.
Mm-hmm. All right, that was very informative. Thank you for filling us in on that.
Mm.
So, what does the future hold for your plans?
You know, I gave my TED talk here in Courtney a month ago, whenever that was,
mm-hmm.
and it's really becoming very popular, and that gave me the idea, plus several other people also mentioned it to me, gave me the idea that I want to actually spread the news, and I want to go on a tour, on a speaking tour in the fall and winter. I can't do it in the summer because I'm busy on the farm.
Sure, yeah, of course.
But come November to March, I do want to go and speak in different communities here and there. So I need basically funding.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody gave me the idea. There's a website called GoFundMe, I think, or something.
Mm, yeah.
And you can actually put your picture and put a little blurb and saying, this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to go back to school, or I want to take my dog to the vet or whatever. And you know, please send money.
Right, yeah.
And so I did that. And several people already have put a bit of seed money.
Oh, good.
But I need a lot more.
Yeah, sure.
My goal is to go and speak to 100 different communities.
Wow.
Whether I can do that this season or maybe next season, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to raise $100,000 so I can go and speak up north and all over Alberta and BC.
Right.
To pay for the expenses of travel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my plan.
Great.
So... I have a post for that on my Facebook page.
Okay.
And if people are interested or to fund that, or if they want to get in touch with me, they can, you know, contact me on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, well, Facebook, email. Email is probably better.
Right.
Mm.
Anyone who's interested in learning a little bit more about,
mm-hmm,
about
mm-hmm.
the subject?
And like I say, I'm available. You know, I kind of enjoy talking to audiences, to groups. And mm-hmm. I've done that in the Valley already a few times. So.
Great. Well, we'll have links to your YouTube videos, your TEDx talk,
mm-hmm.
Your Facebook page and all that stuff so people know where to find you and how to view your stuff.
So. And you're always down on the farm as well.
I'm on the farm every day.
Yeah. All right, Terry. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. We gratefully accept donations to help with the operating costs of the podcast or local ingredients to create new dishes in the Edible Valley Test Kitchen. Check out our website, ediblevalley.com. Like us on Facebook and follow our Twitter feed at Edible Valley. Email us with your comments or guests you would like to hear on the show. Don't hesitate to send along your cooking questions for John to answer on the show or to pick our brain on other local food information. Edible Valley at gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, keep it local.